All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590. The Fan Wednesday morning means it's time for Jeff Merrick, the host of the Jeff Merrick Show on Coast of 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Pretty quiet, chill night last night. Get some sleep, a little red wine. What? Like, how's it going, Jeff?
What is this fantasy land you're describing you? Like? What is this?
I know.
What planet do you live on?
We're Where'd struggling to just, like, put words together, like, just to get a structure of what the hell happened. I don't know.
Bad first game. Got behind early and couldn't get a save. Some undisciplined play. And I don't know. Everyone's looking for answers and excuses. And really, that was a nervous team that you saw yesterday. That was a team that was unprepared to start the game. And next thing you knew, it was 3-0, and they started chasing it. Like, at times when the Maple Leafs looked like loose and comfortable, it looked like a decent team against Tampa. But this is a team that knows how to play playoff hockey. This is a team that's, you know, been there, done that. All the cliches apply. And they showed, like yesterday, Tampa showed the Toronto Maple Leafs how you play in the playoffs. It's a reminder. Every now and then, you must remind them. And yesterday, the Toronto Maple Leafs got reminded.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Tampa's heart is still beating. You know,
of course,
speculation of their demise, greatly exaggerated. But are they in the position where it's almost perfect for them? Like, you're counting us out? Like, this is the motivation we need? Like, again, we're taking calls in the next block. We're probably going to hear some, like, the media. The media is, at fault here.
It's going to be fun.
Because it has been built up. But, like,
you're so brave. You have more guts than I ever. Are you going to take calls after that?
I think we need the perspective, honestly, because we're trying to do the fan stuff.
It's the Fan Morning Show,
Jeff. Putting the fan back in Fan Morning Show. There you go. But, like, do you think this sets up perfectly for Tampa where, you know, they're looking for motivation, right? Like, the motivational elements, like, it's, you can speculate, you can put whatever you want onto it yourself. But this team has been counted out, and how much it would bother them, Cooper, Stamkos specifically, to be counted out.
So that's a really good question. And I think that there are a lot of players, and I'm sure they were not so gently reminded by John Cooper, that were pretty upset about the story going back to the last time these two teams met, where the Toronto Maple Leafs had their way with them on the score sheet and also physically. You know, there was a lot of conversation. You can remember that game. Like, there's a lot of conversation about, oh, they've slayed the dragon, ready for the first round. You know, Luke Shen goes right at Patrick Maroon, doing whatever they want physically to them, even without Matthews and Marner in the lineup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you can be sure that John Cooper has been relentless in reminding those Tampa Bay Lightning players what the story was coming out of that game. I don't want to say that this sets up perfectly for Tampa, because there's a huge story there, and that is the injuries, and we'll, you know, good luck getting information on them, but the injuries to Victor Hedman and Eric Chernak, those are absolutely huge, and you can get by maybe one game in the playoffs without those two players. But you can't run an entire series, I don't think anyone believes. I mean, that's going to be a whole lot of, well, first of all, a whole lot of Mikhail Sergachev out there, a whole lot of Nick Perbix, and a whole lot of Ian Cole. And I don't think anyone thinks that that sets up well for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But as far as stories and motivation goes, I think that those types of things tend to work better with newer teams in the playoffs. I don't know that Tampa, you know, as much as they were upset about, you know, the storyline coming out of the last time these two teams met, I this is a team of self-starters. Like, that's it. There's nothing like the coach can do to rev you up for a game one. You know, I always find it odd the way, you know, people talk about, oh, the way a team starts, that's a reflection of the coach. No, it's not. That's a reflection of how professional and how prepared those players are. Like, it's their job to show up on time. To me, that's never been a reflection of the coach. That one is completely on the players. And yesterday, the Maple Leafs, you know, showed up not prepared to start a game.
So how is that possible then? Like, I get the nervous thing. We've been going through it. Like, how to explain what we saw? I mentioned, you know, complacency, being overwhelmed, being overcoached, inattention, nervousness seems like, you know, the one that makes the most sense. Apathy doesn't make sense, although is it possible? I'm not really sure. Nervousness makes the most sense. Lack of preparation because of nerves, I guess, does make sense. But how is that possible given the stakes and the circumstances?
I think the one thing that, I think you left out one word there, and that's arrogance too. I mean, everybody reading the press clippings.
That's a good one.
The Maple Leafs are storming through this thing. This is going to be, you know, finally the end of the era for the Tampa Bay Lightning on the downturn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, was there part of that there? Perhaps. I think you really struggle when your goaltender lets you down. And make no mistake about it, that was, and, you know, Samsonov said as much in a very colorful way. I played like bleep last night. I think when you start chasing it early and you have a goaltender that's struggling, I think that only compounds your anxiety, your nervousness. I mean, like, when was the last time you saw the Maple Leafs grip the sticks like that?
Last playoffs?
maybe, right? You're right, Ailish. Like, this was the Maple Leafs that got down early and said, uh-oh, here we go again. I don't want this thing on my blade. Mm-hmm. I want to get this thing off my blade. Let someone else have the responsibility. And this Tampa team's it's a team of playoff killers. Like, as much as we talk about how skilled they are, and they are, make no mistake about it, quiet as 50 goals in the NHL, Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, more elite level play. Like, that guy's going to the Hall of Fame. That guy still has one of the most lethal shots, and one of the sneakiest best passers in the entire NHL. It's a murderer's row of elite level playoff performers. And when you get down and you don't have confidence in your goaltender, I mean, you two know how that can affect how you play. You can't cheat. You don't skate with confidence. You want the puck off your stick. No one seemed to want the puck on their stick yesterday. It was one of those games that sometimes when you have a blowout loss in the playoffs, you can kind of say, ah, you know what, 2-1 or 7-3, it doesn't matter. Mm. It's still a loss. You know, move along, eyes towards the next game. But given the weight of history that this team is carrying around, I really don't know that you can if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is a tough one to stick in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and you might not have one of your players out there on the ice with you, Michael Bunting. Yep. After that hit yesterday, you expect a suspension possibly. I know he's going to meet today and chat with the Department of Player Safety, but what do you think the outlook looks like for him? And if it isn't
not good
with the Maple Leafs in the roster, is it with him in the future as well? Because that could have been something that just sours the relationship.
It could, and he's on the expiring contract. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a bad one. Like, that was just that looked just, you know, reckless and sloppy, and that was a expression of anger at, you know, there's no really good time to do something like that in the playoffs. But yeah, I expect him to get suspended. I think we all expect him to get suspended, and then the conversation begins, and it already has, about who do you bring in, and is that person Matthew Nyes? Does he usher into duty, or do you go to, you default to more experience? But either way, there's going to have to be some changes. I would imagine that what we saw by the end of last night's game with Cale Yarncroak up on that top line with Matthews and Marner, what you're probably going to be looking at for game two. And then the question becomes, Bunting's out, who comes in? Is it Wayne Simmonds? Or is it Matthew Nyes? I know the shiny new toy is always tempting, but you know, coaches don't like throwing players over the boards that they don't exactly know what they're going to do. Again, like, I'm always reminded, the NHL is not a developmental league. This is not where you learn to play. And he's only played a couple of games at the NHL level. So I would understand the hesitation. I know everyone's in love with the kid comes out of nowhere and leads the team to glory story, but that's a tough one for coaches. That's really tough for Sheldon Keefe.
Well, the irony there, right, is like Zach Aston-Reese, you know, you pick Zach Aston-Reese because he's not going to make the mistake, and he makes the first mistake that ends up in the back of the net. So there's, you know, I mean, to me, it looks like the free roll at the table to actually have Matthew Nyes in the lineup without making the decision, really. Like, Bunting made the decision for you, but we shall see where the Leafs lean. Just in general with the officiating, bit of a weird night, right? So Michael Bunting does get the benefit of the doubt early, and not that anything that he did with that 5-minute major is affected by, because that happens in a silo. It was a bad hit. Of course, it's going to be called. But you get the one-handed cross check from Luke Shen. It seemed like, you know, what, 12 power play opportunities total in the game, 4 power play goals from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't know if there's a different standard. We talked about it again last year, but I watched that Florida-Boston game, and it was just two teams playing really, really hard, playing at a different standard. And, you know, Charlie McAvoy took a penalty where he was a little over-exuberant or overzealous off or between whistles. But by and large, those teams were able to play. Like, what is it with Tampa and Toronto where it feels like there's just an officiating issue?
Yeah, there were only really two calls that I had a problem with. You know, Luke Shen was one. Like, if that's a cross check, my aunt is my uncle. and the David Kampf penalty. Like, those are the two that I look at and go, I don't know, man. Like, even if it's regular season on a Tuesday night, I don't think I'm making those calls. Let alone game one of a Stanley Cup first round series. I don't think that, like, to be honest with you, I know that, you know, Maple Leafs were sour and a lot of players were sour about the officiating, but to me, that's not the story. The story was your start and how you got behind so quickly. And they got, you know, the only two, you know, they ended up getting two power play goals themselves. To me, one of the stories in the playoffs every year is discipline. I think you have to understand that there's going to be some calls that don't go your way. That's just baked into the pie for the playoffs. Were there some soft calls? To me, the only two that really stand out, the Shen one I thought was really bad. I think it was a really, really bad call, and the David Kampf slash. But other than that, I mean, I kind of looked at all of them and said, like, yeah, those are penalties. Like, they get called. Like, that's just the reality of hockey. And, like, we've seen some, like, I know what you're getting at too. And I think the Boston, Florida example is a really good one. I also think that Minnesota, Dallas mm-hmm. is one that, you know, swings the opposite way, because that one, I mean, that one got out of hand. Like, that was the opposite. That was, okay, they've put the whistles away and they've let them play and look what happened. And I mean, that game was bonkers. Like, it was wonderful and it was fun, but I mean, that was like a really violent, violent game. And I wonder how much the NHL looked at that and said, oh, okay, like, we have to find some type of balance here between, you know, discipline and letting them play and let fans enjoy what playoff hockey looks like. But on the laundry list of things that the Maple Leafs can and should complain about, officiating should be pretty low on that list. Last night they just weren't ready mm-hmm. to play.
Yeah, truth be told, I can only quibble with two as well. But I kind of didn't love the Cernak one, and then you created, I think, the Shen one. And I guess if there's anything to be mad about, it's like, oh, you're inserting yourselves when you don't have to. I thought the Kampf one, I mean, it was a scoring chance. Like, it's kind of, for that one, I'm not all that upset about either. And they're calling penalties, and that's just the fact of the matter. And again, that's you laid out what could happen. You can have games like Dallas, Minnesota that get out of hand. The other part of the officiating thing is, mm-hmm. you know, there's something going around on Twitter where people are pointing to a conflict yep. of interest involving Sheldon Keefe and Wes McCauley. They do have a history in that Sheldon Keefe was fined $25,000 for berating Wes McCauley earlier on in the season, but it's not an on-ice thing. People are looking to an off-ice issue and an off-ice yep. potential conflict of issue. Can you shed any light on that issue in that conversation?
Okay, so I covered this extensively, but what feels like a million years ago when Mike Danton paid a guy by the name of Justin Levi Jones, who was a hitman in St. Louis, to murder his agent, David Frost. So there was, how much time do we have here? There was a number of players from the Brampton area. Sheldon Keefe was one of them. Mike Danton was another. There were others, like, you know, Daryl Tivron and a lot of other players from the area that ended up playing for Quinty and then into the OHL through St. Mike's and through the Barrie Colts as well, who were controlled by a gentleman by the name of David Frost, who was their agent. Now, the story sort of culminates in Mike Danton trying to remove himself from that agent with the murder for hire scheme when St. Louis would have been playing in San Jose that night and Levi Jones was supposed to murder Frost when he showed up at Mike Danton's apartment. And Mike Danton spent time in a federal penitentiary, I believe it was Fort Dix in New Jersey. Anyhow, Sheldon Keefe was originally part of that group, whether it was in Quinty, whether it was in the OHL with the Barrie Colts. Sheldon Keefe was part of that group. Now, David Frost is married to someone by the name of Bridget McCauley, and that is Wes McCauley's sister, also the daughter of the former head of officiating of the NHL, the late, and I would insert, great John McCauley, who would have been rolling over in his grave at that point and probably subsequent as well. I think the mistake that people are making here is trying to position one against the other in the story, and trying to insinuate that there is somehow some type of positive relationship between Wes McCauley and David Frost. And from when I was covering this story, I can honestly tell you nothing could be further from the truth. I know the family wasn't exactly thrilled that Bridget had coupled with David Frost. I can remember one specific conversation. This is when I was working with Bill Waters, former assistant general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who knew John McCauley very well and knew both Bridget and Wes. And Bill essentially, you know, I don't want to say pleading because that's too strong, but just questioning and making sure that Bridget McCauley was okay, because we all knew about David Frost and the vibe and what David Frost had done. And at that point was continuing to do. I mean, this guy would call up on our old Leafs Lunch radio show pretending to be someone else. On a consistent basis, and there were the threats that, you know, I would get it at all hours, and I'm sure Bill got as well. The thing about this story is Sheldon Keefe officially cut off his relationship with David Frost in 2008 when he didn't invite David Frost to his marriage, and that was it. And to my knowledge, there has been no contact ever since. The story, I get it, because it's all under the umbrella of, you know, it's a conspiracy and the Leafs are out to try to, the referees are out to try to get the Toronto Maple Leafs, and McCauley and Frost are aligned, and Sheldon Keefe, it's not. Sheldon Keefe has exactly zero relationship with David Frost, has nothing, I'm sure, but disdain, and probably, and most notably, I think a lot of regret for how he behaved as a young athlete through the OHL. And I don't think that that Wes McCauley has much time for David Frost either. So to me, this one, I saw it on the online last night, this one looks like a spectacular conspiracy theory that someone has uncovered. I can assure you, as someone that covered this story from the very beginning to when, you know, and then subsequently after Mike Danton ended up going to prison at Fort Dix, nothing could be further from the truth. No parties involved here want anything to do with the former agent David Frost. None. Zero.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's very important and great insight, clearly. Just like to make sure, both of them, no ties now, of course, but that shouldn't be seen in any way as a conflict of interest.
Zero. This is something the NHL has been aware of. They know the Mike Danton story. You know, I can recall, I think it was when Keefe went to from Tampa to Arizona, I think maybe Don Maloney. I should probably check this. I shouldn't say that Maloney was the GM at that point, although he might have been. I think one of the conditions was that that David Frost have nothing to do with Keefe anywhere near the rink. Like, I don't even think they wanted him in the arena. This is not something that, oh my goodness, the NHL just stumbled upon this because some Twitter sleuth discovered that, you know, Sheldon Keefe and David and Wes McCauley and the McCauley family have a pass through David Frost. This is something like, guys, this is a murder for hire story. this is Mike Danton, you know, paying Justin Levi Jones to murder his agent. The NHL has known about this from day one, and there is zero conflict between McCauley and Keefe. Zero.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance to at least get to the bottom of it, hear your perspective. I'm hoping that people who are listening and can also take that perspective and learn from it as well, because it can get blown up quite big.
I found that, to be honest, Ailish, I found the whole conversation around that last night on Twitter really distasteful. I really did. Like, it's one thing to think, okay, you know, there's a bias somehow, or I don't know, Wes McCauley didn't like, you know, the blast that he got from Sheldon Keefe. Like, okay, Wes McCauley is a professional right here. Mm-hmm. Sheldon Keefe is a professional as well. I just think that, you know, dragging that old story, which is a very complicated one as well, and trying just to distill it into a couple of tweets to try to present some type of bias through a really, like, the things that happened to that hotel in Quinte were really disturbing. Trying to distill it through that, I found, you know, I don't know, just profoundly gross, to be honest with you. I really did. I found it really distasteful.
Well, appreciate your time and your effort on it, Jeff. Thanks for helping us break down last night's game. Hopefully next Wednesday, a little bit more positively stuff to chat about, all right?
Well, how much worse can it get, Ailish?
That's what I said. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that's the spin, is it's only upwards from here, right? All right, thanks,
You're
Jeff.
You're so positive. It's great.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
try.
Thanks, guys.
I'll chat with
Be
you
good.
Later. Jeff Merrick, host of The Jeff Merrick Show, and host of 32 Thoughts, the podcast.
Well, just quickly on that, because that was heavy. I think, you know, when you're seeing that stuff last night, you're like, okay, does, if Wes McCauley has a relationship with this person, maybe there's something there, right? Oh, sorry, Jeff, we still got you on there?
I just wanted to ask you guys, look out the window quickly. Is the sun coming up? I can't see. I'm just
no,
doing this.
No, it never comes up after a Leafs loss.
Oh, okay. Just checking. That's all. Got to go.
It's coming
you,
up.
Bye.
Thanks, Jeff.
That was Jeff Merrick, host of the 32 Thoughts podcast and the Jeff Merrick Show. Just, yeah, I was saying, like, when that's all happening, it was like, okay, do they see each other at Christmas? Because that's an issue if they see each other at Christmas, right? But if both are estranged, which they are, which Jeff says, like, I think that's some important context that needed to be shared.
Yeah, appreciate that he's also covered this from the start.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
Didn't just Google it. All right. Okay.
We didn't get to any sound in the first
hour. I just want to also just remind people that they should be getting ready to call. Give them the numbers, you know? We're going to have your calls after our break, after we do something to chew on, and after we play a couple of pieces of audio. So get your phones out, get ready, get in the queue. I'll chat with you today. It's 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. We'll have lots to unpack. We've been talking for an hour and a half now. Maybe we've helped give you some perspective. Maybe there's still some big unanswered questions. Yeah, you're not alone on that one. We'll go through all that at 7:30. We'll get you your calls on our Maple Leafs hotline this morning. We want to hear from you. It's the Fan Morning Show, so let's hear from the fans.
Okay, so a couple things. I mean, it wasn't the most monumental post-game press conference, I don't think, by any means. There was something interesting, though, from John Tavares, who was talking about, like, the need for discipline and maybe being critical of the officiating just a tad, alluding to the fact that, you know, if it's a 50-50, you know, been there, done that, gets the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. So here's Tavares on, you know, the officiating and the need to be disciplined.
You know, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of momentum swings in playoff hockey, and obviously we have to be more disciplined in our game and obviously staying out of the box, you know, and you know, there's, you know, some calls or most calls are, you know, those ones that are borderline, more likely than not, probably going to go their way. They've been in the finals three times in a row, and we have to be just extremely disciplined in staying out of the box and playing hard and understanding the line we can't cross, and you know, earning our power plays, and obviously, you know, being disciplined and structured throughout our game, you know, which has obviously been a solid part of our team all year.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the intention was there fully. Was he kind of conflating thoughts in that, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning know how to deal with these situations, or was it, hey, why do they get all the calls? I'm not sure exactly what he was getting to.
Really,
and he was like
all the
kind
calls.
Of merging thoughts, yeah, a little bit there. But, you know, there were eight power plays for the Lightning. They went 4-for-8. They were gifted one by Sheldon Keefe, who decided to challenge that. And I guess, you know, the most interesting thing, he did stand up for Michael Bunting, but I think him explaining the decision to challenge was something also worth hearing. If we have it.
You got to tell Josh. Justin would like to hear the clip about the challenge
on the Corey Perry goal
by Sheldon Keefe.
Let us know if you got it, fellas.
I felt that the goal itself that we were challenging in itself was perhaps the backbreaker and the game breaker. That would be real hard to come back from that point. We did look at it as a high percentage challenge for sure, but I did. There is one angle that you can tell clearly from the back that Sammy's foot is definitely impacted by some sticks coming in around his pad there. You can see his foot definitely is gets jarred. So we see something there, and to me at that point, even if we think it's a 5-10% chance that it might be, some of those are so hard to call. It's one of the hardest ones we've had to call all season. But I just thought, given where the game was at, if there's any chance we could get that goal back, maybe have a chance to come back in the game. But that one there, you know, now you got to get 6 to come back in the game. So to me, didn't look at it like we had a lot to lose in that situation.
It's just, it's like high percentage challenge. Then he says 5-10% chance. That's kind of strange. And I don't really see how that math plays out. But the fact that he said if there's any chance we had to take it, I kind of agree with that, just given where that game was going at the time. If they did have any inkling or any replay that thought, like, yeah, this might get called back, I guess go for it there. But yeah, that was when they made that decision. And even if they thought it was 10%, honestly, you probably shouldn't have made that decision. But if they did think there was a chance, I guess it's a little bit excusable.
All right, we'll keep unpacking last night's loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning, Game 1, a forgettable one. But let's get something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
This is a good news story. We all need one this morning. Damar Hamlin has been cleared to return to football through NFL and specialists that have been taking care of him since his collapse back in Monday Night Football in Cincinnati. Less than 4 months later, 25-year-old Damar Hamlin has announced that he's received full medical clearance to continue making an NFL comeback. Obviously, incredible news. This was a scary, scary moment for not only the sporting world, but anybody that has just any level of concern of young, healthy people getting hurt and getting sick. And he has made a recovery that we're going to be covering. And it is just obviously a really special moment that we all got to kind of band together and be a part of this. We have Damar Hamlin's himself, his announcement that he's going to make a NFL comeback. I'm not specifically saying if he's going to play, but he's feeling good and he's been cleared. So let's play that clip.
I've been on a journey and I've seen, you know, some of the top professionals across the country, and their answers to me were pretty much all the same. They were the same. And this event was life-changing, but it's not the end of my story. So I'm here to announce that I plan on making a comeback to the NFL. My heart is still in it, you know, my heart is still in the game. I love the game. It's something I want to prove to myself, not nobody else, you know. It's just, I just want to show people that fear is a choice, that, you know, you can keep going in something without having the answers and without knowing what's at the end of the tunnel. Or, you know, you might feel anxious. You might feel any type of way, you know, but you just keep putting that right foot in front of the left one and you keep going. I want to stand for that.
I mean, he puts it pretty beautifully. Bigger things in sports, bigger things in wins and losses. His health and his journey back to football can be an inspiration to all. I think it's a really great perspective to hear, especially on a morning like this.
I never thought we'd have that. Never thought we'd see that announcement. Like, pleasantly mm-hmm. surprised, right? Like, we're just thinking about a life rather than a career. But when it's that sort of discussion, sometimes like maybe you just stop thinking about the career a little bit and just the man. Unbelievable. I hope to see it. It'll be an unbelievable story.
All right, we're going to take a break because we have your calls on the other side. We'll take them in the queue at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Let's chat. Game one of the Maple Leafs versus the Tampa Bay Lightning has concluded. Let's talk about how you're feeling this morning. We'll do this routinely throughout the series. Hopefully we get some more happier calls down the road, but let's break down game one, Maple Leafs loss on the other side of the break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Justin and Ailish. Day after what Justin puts maybe in his Mount Rushmore of playoff defeats, moments in Maple Leafs lore.
Modern Maple Leafs lore.
Well, yeah. How many heads can you have on Mount Rushmore?
Well, four. Four is generally what you're looking for.
Modern. You're still getting close. A little family out there on the rock cliff.
I guess that's really the issue, is that
need to make more room.
You need more room.
Well, maybe we have some positive listeners, some nice vibes this morning. We decided, hey, you know what? Didn't confront the bosses. Just said, we're opening the phone lines tomorrow, all right? We'll deal with the consequences. So we believe that we get to chat with our fans. We'll make this maybe a cathartic moment for us all. The Maple Leafs therapy hotline possibly this morning. We're going to take your calls routinely throughout the series. We'll start it here with a reaction to game one. As we said, the number is 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or just *590 on your Rogers cell phone. We've got a lot of listeners tuned in here, so we'll try to get through as many as possible. Thanks for your patience. We'll start it off with Jerry in Port Sydney. Oh, beautiful little Muskoka-esque morning for you. Are you feeling the happy vibes up there this morning, Jerry?
Well, it's a beautiful day, but the TV screen wasn't too happy last night, no.
What was the biggest point of frustration for you when you look back now at 12 hours later, Jerry?
Before the game even started this week, Justin Hall, not only in the lineup, but starting the game, he's been a playoff brain fart specialist since he's been elite. Sheldon Keefe decided to start him, and sure enough, a simple play let his man walk out from behind the net, never laid a finger on him, one goal. The team under huge pressure, that's the worst scenario you could possibly, and it was created by the coach. Alex Kerfoot, as well, is a line killer wherever he goes, and he just seems to get played over and over. So the lineup before the game started made me angry.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with you on starting Justin Hall. I mean, like, if he's playing in the game, you should be comfortable putting him out there at any time. But, like, getting off on the front foot, getting that first shift, like, it was, like, why wasn't it Matthews? Just get it going. Like, I don't know. I guess it was Ryan O'Reilly. You got the John Tavares pop. Alex Kerfoot's interesting because, like, he was a rock star shorthanded to start the series last year. Didn't play much shorthanded yesterday with 8 power plays for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, I guess he's slipped in the ranking there, but Alex Kerfoot and Justin Hall, yeah, I agree. Hard to have anything really positive to say about those two last night.
Well, big lineup decisions to be made in the next 24 hours. We'll see where Sheldon Keefe goes next. But we're going to have Vince Van Brampton join us now. You got some positive vibes, I'm hearing.
Yeah, I would rather have the ugly game be the very first game than have it be that it knocks us out in the sixth game. For as bad as the Leafs played bad last night. There's no doubt about it. The officiating definitely wasn't the best, but I'd rather have the first game done and over with. Realistically, I don't think anybody expected this to go six or are expecting this to go 6 or 7 games. No matter if it's the third game we lose by a goal, as Toronto fans, we are going to dissect the game no matter what. So all I can say is that, okay, the game's over. It was bad. It's bad egg in the face. If that doesn't give something, some oomph to the players, I mean, or the coach, and see what everything happened. Obviously, they're going to hear the media. Well, let's see what happens. But, I mean, I got faith. They got this far. I guess we'll see within the next 6 games.
All right, Vince. I couldn't agree more, buddy. I was trying to find that positive spin. I'm glad I got someone on my team. Just, it's a long series. We can certainly react the way we want this morning, but when it comes to getting back on the ice today for your skate and then tomorrow morning for your pregame skate, it's got to be in the past. You got to flush it. I hope that's possible. Thanks, Vince. That was Vince from Brampton. We're moving to Daryl in Wasaga Beach. That's a second day of Wasaga Beach callers. Big fan morning show population up there. Daryl, how's it going this morning? Daryl, do we have you? Daryl, maybe not. Daryl.
Hello.
Oh, Daryl, how's it going, buddy? How's it going, Daryl?
I'm good. Yeah. I think a lot of blame's got to be put on the coach. Like, this team is never ready to play weaker teams. We saw in the game last week against Tampa, Bunting take a fake baseball swing at Corey Perry when he got ticked off at him. It's just another Kadri situation waiting to happen. He's obviously got something against William Nylander, taking him off the first power play and constantly putting him on third line and so forth. And the guy they need to move off that power play who screws it up is Morgan Riley, as far as I'm concerned. I'm just so fed up with the whole juggling of the lines and always trying to accommodate Mitch Marner and Tavares and Matthews. Nylander can score just as well as any of them.
Yeah, and he proved it last night. I mean, William Nylander, give him credit. That was definitely the moment of the game in terms of positivity for Leaf fans. He came out at the end or the tail end, the final or the second of 2 minutes on that power play, and it was just a goal created strictly through William Nylander and getting demoted. And listen, the power play tactics worked because William Nylander scored a goal. You went 2 for 4, and you got a Ryan O'Reilly goal, and he's the one that replaced William Nylander. But I think it is fair, completely fair, to criticize Sheldon Keefe. But, like, I just don't know how to criticize him on the preparation and the start and the how you deal with nervousness as a team. Like, I'm not sure how you can blame him for how the team performed in the first 10 minutes of that game and beyond.
I mean, Jeff said it best, too. It's like, it's kind of on the players to be the ones that get out there and play hard. Like,
we don't need more excuses.
10.
We don't need more excuses for these guys. Like, okay. Sheldon Keefe, I'm sure he had a game plan. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he was prepared for this game. It's just the Leafs and the players weren't.
Keep your calls coming at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or star 590 on your Rogers cell phone. We've got Gary in Brampton, who was at the game last night. How's it going, Gary?
Hey, good morning, guys.
How's it? How are you feeling a couple hours removed from being there at Scotiabank Arena?
Yeah, I was there last night with my buddy, and I could tell you one of the things, even after the two Tampa goals, my buddy looked over at me, and he goes, Tampa doesn't really look like they're skating well. And he goes, and they're up 2-0, 2-0, right? And I looked over at him, and I said, I'm telling you, Steve, playoff Tampa is a real thing. I think they have the ability to turn it on and off. You know, it doesn't matter how they finish in the last 20 games. I know a lot's been said about that. And yeah, you know, the start, the previous caller was talking about not being prepared. The start was, from my vantage point, it was horrendous for the Leafs. And you give a team, it doesn't matter who they are, but a team like Tampa, on the road, you give them that. And like my buddy says, he goes, I don't even think Tampa's like at operating at 60%. And they're up, and you just give them life. It just it sucked the air out of the building. I could tell you that right after the first period, you could tell everyone's heads are down. But I think Tampa, Vasilevsky, Kucherov, I mean, they're just so well coached, right? And I think playoff Tampa is a real thing. The ability to turn it on and off is what scares me.
Gary, did you leave the game early? Be honest with us.
Yes, we left at the 10-minute mark in the third period.
That's all right. I understand. I got to beat the traffic. You're from Brampton. You know, get out of the city. It's understandable, but hopefully you didn't have to shell out too much for those tickets. Thanks for calling in, Gary. Yep. Lots of folks here in the call log here, Justin. Any thoughts on Gary?
No, let's roll through. I mean, good for him beating the traffic. I certainly appreciated getting out of there swiftly.
All right, it's Ian and Allison calling in this morning. Ian, how are you feeling this morning?
Oh, I'm just peachy. How are you guys? Listen, I'm going to rant a bit, and this is what I do after the Leafs show me this again. Okay, this is the same team that was up 3-1 against Montreal in the bubble and choked, came back the next year season opener and lost to the Habs. Statement game, didn't do anything. Okay, another statement game last night, and what did they do? Fell flat. Okay, this team is all skill, no kill. And it's the definition of insanity. Same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I'm done. Bye-bye, Dubas. Bye-bye, Shanny. Shanahan plan didn't work. I'm done, man. This team is cursed. I don't know what to do. I'm 48, and I expect to die and never see a cup here. I don't know what to say.
So, Ian,
it's a curse. What else could it be?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, there's no explanation other than a curse, right? Like, why? Like, why did this not work? Why isn't it working?
Where's the character, man? This was a statement game. We lost to Tampa in Game 7. We choked. And you know what else I noticed last series last year? We circled their net. They drove our net, and that was the difference. Nick Paul ran over Soupy I don't know how many times that game, and he scored 2 goals. Our third and fourth line do not compare to Tampa's, and that's how you win in the playoffs. No character, and we don't got a Vasilevsky. We don't even have a half a Vasilevsky, man. I'm sorry, but Dubas choked on getting a goaltender for us. I'm done.
Yeah, the things we thought we knew, and thanks, Ian, from Allison. That's a great call.
Keep that guy's number.
The things we thought we knew, right? Like, we thought we were so confident in Samsonov. We don't have to worry about that. Now we're worrying big time about that. Well, the fourth line from Tampa Bay, yeah, they were historically great 2 years ago, but they were garbage all season long, and guess what?
Well,
yeah,
they
were
the
running circles around the Maple Leafs' depth last night. I mean, the things we thought we knew, right? And it all seems to come back, and it really, really tormented fans and the team last night.
That was a spicy call. Maybe he seems like he would get along well with J.D. Bunkus, those two co-hosts of the podcast together, Ian and J.D. All right, Josh in Toronto is joining us now. He's got a positive, though. I like a little positive, Josh. How's it going?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, we're good. Thanks for calling in.
Big fan of the show. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I heard you guys talking earlier about, you know, who on the Leafs really impressed you, and you were saying that, you know, it was pretty much Ryan O'Reilly and then no one else. But I wanted to throw Achari's name into the mix there. I thought he played a really good game and was pretty physical. Winning a lot of battles, didn't cross the line. And I thought I was really, really, really impressed with his approach. Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't a great game. Wasn't super thrilled with how that went out. But yeah, it just kind of came out super flat. But I actually had a question for you guys. Having never really played high-performance competitive hockey myself, I'm wondering, in your opinion, how much of Sheldon's response today moving forward is, you know, pure X's and O's, fundamentals of, you know, hockey strategy, and how much of it is, you know, really digging into the, like, the psychological aspect? Like, what are you afraid of doing, you know, the whole, like, quicksand kind of meeting, like in that Keanu Reeves movie, The Replacements?
Yeah, I appreciate the call and for the question. Justin's pointing at me to answer this one because I played one level higher of hockey.
One level higher. You're a professional hockey analyst.
I think it's really important that it's almost like you don't even need to do the X's and O's. That this team is good enough to win the next four games, but it's between the years. And that's what we talked about yesterday. I don't know what it is. There's no different game plan you need to draw up. You don't need to change your face-off structure. It is just playing with some passion, with some heart, with some grit. Like, you can't show that on a whiteboard with a Sharpie. That is looking each other in the eye in this dressing room, the guy beside you in this stall and that stall, and the coach is leading it and the management is leading it, and saying, it's just not good enough. It's it's inexcusable.
I would say, like, the last thing you want would be more information.
More tweaks and changes.
But I would let's say Nikita Kucherov did something on the power play that they thought was, like, killer, right?
Okay.
Like, it's something,
sure.
Like, you, maybe show an example of, hey, this killed us. We need to be, like, mindful. Again, though, that pre-scout should have happened already. If I'm looking at it, if I'm a player, what I want right now is, honestly, someone to get in my face and, like, get this going. But Sheldon Keefe, like, at this point, he's got to be searching for answers himself, because you don't think he's tried that? Like, you don't think he's tried yelling and screaming, kicking over
guard? He tried at the beginning of the year, and he had to go back on it, remember?
Exactly.
He got, like, in trouble.
I feel like he would just be like, I don't know what
Man,
to do.
You got
to
call people out after that.
What is the motivational element here? I think you might be leaning on a player. I think you might be leaning specifically on Ryan O'Reilly. You might be leaning on someone inside the dressing room to do that for you.
Yeah.
Because
it's,
I feel like he thinks, like, throwing up his hands, like, what more can I do?
I mean, this is kind of your, feels like the last chance to get in there and ruffle some feathers, so you gotta find a way to motivate your team to come back from an embarrassing loss like that. All right, Daryl Whippy's joining us. Daryl, how are you feeling this morning?
It's the same thing every year. I mean, you go to last year to game seven, you get beat by Tampa, and they come out flat, like again last night. Like, it goes back to, you hate to say it, Mike Babcock's old saying, starting on time. That was not a start on time. This team is playing with no purpose, playing with no passion, no heart. Austin Matthews looked like he couldn't care less if he was playing hockey last night or sitting at home playing a video game. He just has no drive, the whole team. I think, I still swear to God, Harold Ballard, every time they go up the ice, is pulling them back the other way. They're cursed.
I appreciate the call. I mean, I think starting on time is certainly a major facet of that, but even finishing a period on time, like, think about two devastating goals in the last dying seconds.
We're talking about that. Like, you, when's the last time you saw that?
It was actually outrageous.
Two goals under five.
You go into
seconds.
The break with this level of, oh my God, are we kidding? They scored with 0.01 seconds left. You go into the dressing room with this feeling of defeat. Then you go back on the ice and you're playing from behind again. It's just like, you can't lose the first or the last minute of a period. They did both.
Was that Daryl? I think Daryl's right to underscore Austin Matthews, but I think Mitch Marner should be lumped in too. Like, Leon Draisaitl in the playoffs. Watch him. Watch the level. Watch how, not how different it is, because he's brilliant all the time, but it's different. These guys need to find something different, something new within them, because it is different in the playoffs. You have to be more than what you were. And more often than not, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner fail to be.
Yep.
And, like, we're not even, like, talking about John Tavares in this discussion. He makes $11 million. You got to be impactful. You got to have some sort of impact on the game.
Either on or off the ice, in the locker room. Pete in North Oshawa. North Oshawa. He does not want to be confused with being in South Oshawa. Pete, how are you doing?
No, my wife likes to say we are in Columbus, not Oshawa. But it's still part of the Schwa. First of all, it's a game. Second of all, like, one game. Second of all, the reason they went out and got the guys they did with a winning pedigree in the playoffs is to do the talking in the dressing room when stuff like this happens. So I don't think it's on Sheldon Keefe to do a thing. Mm. It's going to be the guys internally that are going to do it. Third, what do you expect a team that has not managed to win a playoff series for so long going into a game against a team that for the last 3 years has been in the room with the Stanley Cup, right? They've had little tweaks and things, but they are still the team that has won the Cup twice and in the finals once. So they know what they're doing. They don't get flustered first game on the road, whatever. They don't care. It's up to the Leafs to put this one aside and just play their game. Because I picked the team, believe it or not, I picked this in five with a loss in the first game. So we'll see how they respond.
Well, you got one down. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Tampa served a reminder, right? Tampa in every way served a reminder. And thanks for the call, Pete. They're not going anywhere. And they know they have situational know-how that the Maple Leafs could only dream of having, right?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you nailed it. It's on the Leafs. It's on the Leafs to change the narrative, to break the cycle. Because as long as things continue the way they are, until someone puts their foot in the ground and changes something, history will repeat itself. And history is more likely to repeat itself against a team that has its own history of winning and an nearly unbreakable winning culture. It's on the Leafs. It's on the players.
And it's just one game, as he mentioned, Pete in North Oshawa, but he can rally off four in a row and keep my Leafs in five, bet, then I'm happy as well, Pete. I appreciate everyone for calling in. I know we didn't get to a couple people that were on the line, Alex, Alan, and Jay. You were waiting patiently. We'll try to get to you next time. Appreciate it. We had lots of callers in today. Lots of people wanted to chat about the Maple Leafs and that devastating loss in game one, but it is game one, and we'll be back tomorrow to tee up game two. Appreciate you guys calling in. We're going to do this throughout the series. So if you didn't get in today, get in on Thursday.
No mention of the tarot cards today.
We muted those guys from calling in.
I thought we might get, because there were a lot of people in the mentions last night talking about the tarot
reading. I will say, if this goes the way the tarot cards had predicted, that'll be Amazon top seller the season. Yeah. We'll be buying tarot cards if figure out how their tax return is going to go.
Forget, you know, stressing about the future. Just know the future.
Use a tarot card.
Just pull a card.
I'm telling you, it could be something there. Quickly before we take a break and talk to Nick Kiprios, we've been giving away tickets all week long. Let's bring some positive vibes to wrap up this hour. Blue Rodeo's coming to Bud Stage on August 26th with special guests Wild Rivers and Rose Cousins. We're giving away tickets all week long. To enter, just listen to the Fan Morning Show this week. Text in the code word to 590-590. Today's code word is Dark Angel. Oof. Text Dark Angel to 590-590 right now for your chance to win. We're giving away another pair of tickets tomorrow, but if you don't win with us, make sure you secure your tickets by going to Ticketmaster.ca starting this Friday at 10 a.m. Dark Angel, 590-590. I don't know if that's some sort of like...
Even the code words are a little dark.
I was going to say the code words are kind of like spooky, cursed this morning. Dark Angel, that's Bud Stage, Blue Rodeo, August 26th. Best of luck. Send that text in at 590-590 and you get another chance tomorrow. Tickets on sale on Friday. Thanks for everyone for calling in and being a part of the Maple Leaf Hotline this morning. We'll keep that rolling throughout the rest of the series. Hopefully we get more opportunities to chat with you all. We've got Nick Kiprios joining us on the other side of the break. We'll see his thoughts on all of this fun Wednesday morning.